Chapter 30. That very night, while the Arashino slept, I wrote to Mother by the light of the Tadan burning under the dye vats in the annex. Whether my letter had the proper effect or whether Mother was already prepared to reopen the Okya, I don't know, but a week later an old woman's voice called out at the Arashino's door, and I rolled it open to find Auntie there. Her cheeks had sunken where she'd lost teeth, and the sickly gray of her skin made me think of a piece of sashimi left on the plate overnight. But I could see that she was still a strong woman. She was carrying a bag of coal in one hand and foodstuffs in the other to thank the Arashinos for their kindness toward me. The next day, I said a tearful farewell and went back to Gion, where Mother, Auntie, and I set about the task of putting things back in order. When I'd had a look around the Okya, the thought crossed my mind that the house itself was punishing us for our years of neglect. We had to spend 4 or 5 days on only the worst of the problems, wiping down the dust that lay as heavily as gauze over the woodwork, fishing the remains of dead rodents from the well, cleaning Mother's room upstairs, where birds had torn up the tatami mats and used the straw to make nests in the alcove. To my surprise, Mother worked as hard as any of us, partly because we could afford only a cook and the one adult maid, though we also did have a young girl named Etsuko. She was the daughter of the man on whose farm Mother and Auntie had been living. As if to remind me of how many years had passed since I first came to Kyoto as a 9-year-old girl, Etsuko herself was 9. She seemed to regard me with the same fear I'd once felt toward Hatsumomo, even though I smiled at her whenever I could. She stood as tall and thin as a broom, with long hair that trailed behind her as she scurried about, and her face was narrow like a grain of rice, so that I couldn't help thinking that one day she too would be thrown into the pot just as I had been, and would fluff up white and delicious to be consumed. When the Okya was livable again, I set out to pay my respects around Gion. I began by calling on Mameha, who was now in a 1-room apartment above a pharmacy near the Gion Shrine. Since her return a year earlier, she had no donna to pay for anything more spacious. She was startled when she first saw me, because of the way my cheekbones protruded, she said. The truth was, I felt just as startled to see her. The beautiful oval of her face was unchanged, but her neck looked sinewy and much too old for her. The strangest thing was the way she sometimes held her mouth puckered like an old woman's, because her teeth, though I could see no difference in them, had been quite loose at one time during the war and still caused her pain. We talked for a long while, and then I asked if she thought dances of the old capital would resume the following spring. The performances hadn't been seen in a number of years.